All right, good morning, everybody. Can you hear me okay on this microphone?
Yep.
All right, very good. My name is John Duan, and my game is defense. I'm the owner of Baseball Info Solutions and the author of the Fielding Bible, Volume 3, which just came out. And there are a lot of brilliant minds at this convention, and I brought mine. No, not mine. Mine, right here. His name is Ben Jedlevic, and he's one of our top researchers at Baseball Info Solutions, and also the co-author of the Fielding Bible Volume 3. So thank you all for coming, and good morning. It's what a tremendous presentation we just saw about scouting and sabermetrics and how to blend the two, and what scouts know. Put to shame all the little things that we're learning and we're trying to add to the game of baseball. I have so much respect for what scouts do, and we're trying to add what little we can in terms of analytics. And I think we're making good progress, but never belittle what the role of scouts are. So we're going to talk today. We presented this in the book. We're going to talk a little bit about the Ted Williams shift and does it work. So let me just show you some video here, just for fun to start, if I can find the mouse.
Go 5. Amateur draft, minor league draft, shifts. Deep short. Another base hit, this one to left. Pitch. And he hooks one into left.
We're doing pretty well right now, but everybody else is kind of clumped together.
Ugla, right into the ship.
So, we had some great times out there.
Ugla with a...
hot shot towards Sip. Payoff pitch.
Okay, so what you saw there was, let's see, how do I get this started again? Help me, man. What you saw there was some video of, you probably guessed, of Dan Ugla, and I'll talk about Dan in a little bit towards the end of my part of the presentation. But the question that we're trying to answer is, does the Ted Williams shift work? But let me give you some anecdotal evidence before we get into some of the research that we did. So the Tampa Bay Rays were the best defensive team of 2011. And we think we have a pretty good handle on measuring defensive runs, how many runs are saved by your defense. And the Tampa Bay Rays defense saved them about 85 runs. It's not an exact number. It's still something that we're working on, but we think it's a good estimate that it's 85 runs. They won 91 games last year, beat the Red Sox by one game. 85 runs is 8 to 9 wins. Figured out, 82, 83 wins with an average defense is what the Tampa Rays are all about. So defense can make a big difference. Other good defensive teams, Diamondbacks, Padres, Reds, and Rockies last year. Just so happens that the Rays are also the most aggressive shifting team in terms of infielder shifting. We were looking at infield shifts in this situation. They had 216 shifts last year. Milwaukee Brewers 170, Indians and Blue Jays, and then he dropped way down to three teams tied at 75. So against the top 10 shifted hitters, and I'll show you who those are in a little bit, the Rays shifted 110 times, and 66 of them are what we call the Ted Williams shift. The Ted Williams shift is the classic three infielders to the right of a base. And against other hitters, about 100 shifts. So they're shifting a lot on the top 10, but also shifting against other hitters. So is it coincidental that the team that shifted the most in baseball also had the best defense in baseball? I contend that it's not entirely coincidental. There's obviously good defenders on the Tampa Bay Rays that account for their great defense, Ben Zobrist and Evan Longoria, things like that. But I contend that shifting is part of it. This is anecdotal evidence number one. The Brewers infield entering 2011. Prince Fielder, minus 17 runs saved in 2010. He was 35 out of 35 first basemen that we ranked defensively in 2010. Cost his team 17 runs with his defense. Ricky Weeks cost his team 16 runs with his defense, ranked 34 out of 35. Nestor Betancourt, 27 runs cost his team defensively, ranked 35 out of 35. Casey McGee, 14, negative 14 runs saved, 31 out of 35. Can you construct a worse defense than that? I mean, they're all ranked in the upper 30s out of the 35 that we rank at every position. So what did Ron Renicki do in 2011? Well, he said, I'm going to try shifting. I'm going to see what I can do. You saw the slide earlier, they were number two in shifting. And he shifted against the top 10 hitters 45 times with 25-10 weighted shift. But what he did a little differently was he shifted a lot against other hitters, 125 shifts. And what's interesting here, the Brewers, before Ron Renicki, were the least shifting team in all the majors in 2010. So what happened? Prince Fielder improved from 17 runs, costing his team, still below average, cost his team 9 runs in 2011. Ricky Weeks went from 16 runs to minus 5. Betancourt from minus 27 all the way to minus 7. McGee from minus 14 to actually a little bit above average performance at 3 runs saved for his defense. So altogether, these four infielders improved by 56 runs. That's 5 wins. And is that coincidental with shifting? I don't think so. So that's anecdotal evidence piece two. Now I want to share with you, it's really preliminary research. This is the first time that we've really researched this stuff, but I think it's starting to give a picture of this whole thing. So let me take you through that. So here's the origin of the Ted Williams shift. There was a little bit going on before this, but this is really the origin. And here's a picture of one of my readers sent me. It's the game on July 14th, 1946, the second game of doubleheader. Lou Boudreau was managing. And in the first game of the doubleheader, Ted Williams hit 3 homers, drove in 8 runs, and they won something like 12-11. The first at-bat that Williams had in the second game of the double, he pulled a double in the second game of the doubleheader. He pulled a double down the right field line. Next time up, Boudreau's like, I'm sick of this. I can't stand it anymore. He's pulling everything. I'm bringing my infielders to the right second. And he not only, I don't know if you can see it, he not only has 3 infielders, he has 4 infielders to the right of second. So this was the origin of the Ted Williams shift. And what happened in that at-bat, Williams walked on 4 pitches. So the pitcher he's going to hit it. I don't care if they're shifting. I give up. All right. So that's the Ted Williams shift. And most of our research is about the Ted Williams shift. And here's an example of the positioning of a Ted Williams shift. On top, you see 3 infielders to the right. You might have the second base. The usual thing is a second baseman playing in short right field. And we also keep track of other shifts where they're sliding over, or the second baseman's really deep, but the shortstop's down on the right. So we're differentiating between the Ted Williams shift and the other shift. And what we've done in this study is really only look at the Ted Williams shift, because we felt like, let's just focus on that for starters. But just to give you a list of all the top shifted hitters, and this is all the shifts, here they are. Not surprising, We all know this off the top of our heads for the most part. David Ortiz, Ryan Howard, Carlos Pena, Adam Duck, Prince Fielder. Those guys are getting shifted over 200 times. You get down to the bottom of the list, not quite as much. You got Teixeira at 180, 300 less than David Ortiz. Ryan McCann, 380 or 70 less than David Ortiz and Jack Cuss. So, you know, it's really, you know, there's really just a handful of guys that are shifted a lot. Now I want to give you some of the results. So on that list were two guys, Carlos Pena and Brian McCann, who, when we looked at our data, were doing better when the shift was on. So we just studied grounders and short liners and bunts. And we found that Carlos Pena and Brian McCann both hit better with the Ted Williams shift on than when the Ted Williams shift wasn't on. And so Carlos Pena, for example, hit 243 with the shift on and 191 when the shift wasn't on. On grounders, short liners, and bunts. What about those bunts? You see 11 bunt hits there. He put 15 balls in play, 15 bunts in play against a shift in the last 2 years and got 11 hits on it. Not too shabby. And he has figured out what he believes beats the shift. And it looks, the evidence seemed to suggest that he is being successful beating the shift as he's hitting better with the shift down. In the book, we talk about he's done it in really cool situations. He's done it with two strikes. He's done it leading off the inning more so than not. It's really smart baseball that he has played in beating the shift. And McCann is 4 out of 5 on bunt hits put in play. So we got out of those top 10, we got these two guys. We're going to eliminate them from the study to see what happens to the non-bunters. So we got our remaining 8 hitters, batting average on grounders, short liners, and bunts, and with the Ted Williams shift, and we have to do a weighted average because you can't just simply add up the numbers, and you know, because some guys have more opportunities than others. So we do a proper control environment, weighting the numbers, and you get Ted Williams shift on. These 8 guys hit 194, no Ted Williams shift on, 245. So it's making a 51-point difference based on our data for the last, this is the last 2 years, right? Last 2 years. So, you know, this is preliminary evidence. It's thorough research. It's looking at every situation where the shift was on or a shift was not on for these guys who are shifted regularly, on all their grounders, short liners, and bunts. And so, we think it's telling us something, at least preliminary, whatever that word is, initially. We went one step further. We did some early research on all of our shift data. It looked at initially that when runners were on base, that maybe the shift wasn't working. But when we honed it down even better with the Ted Williams shift, it looked like even with runners on base, the shift was being effective against these hitters who really pulled the ball. So just to show you an example of one of our software products that we provide to major league teams, this is a product that shows how often and where a hitter tends to hit their grounders and short liners. So Ryan Howard, obviously a guy who's shifted very frequently. On his last 120 grounders, he's hit 89% of those to the right of second base. And you can see the red areas where he's just hitting a ton of them, 30, 26, 18 grounders in those areas out of his last 120, virtually nothing to the left side. And then at the very bottom, 0 bunt attempts in his last 464 plate appearances. So he hasn't thought about the idea, can I beat the shift with the bunts? So he's a guy that everybody knows about shifting. But here's a guy that no one knows about shifting. Or maybe the Rays do. I didn't look at what the Rays were doing yet, but on this particular guy. But this is, you know, pretty crystal clear that that Alex Gordon should be Sheffield. So he hits 84% to the right of second base. Why not put 75% of your fielders to the right of second base if he's hitting 84% of his grounders and short liners? That's how I look at it. And he has no bunt attempts. And the guy we were showing video, did you get a flavor that he was pulling it, or did you get a flavor that you couldn't really tell? I don't know, I've looked at it too much, so I don't know what my impression was of just looking at the plays. But we intentionally selected 10 plays of Ugla and showed 9 of them that he pulled, and then there was one in there he hit to the right side. And the guy is the absolute pronounced pull hitter. 91% of his grounders go to the left of second. We consider that a shift candidate, and he's not bunted at all his last 314 plate appearances. Our software looks at, for a left-handed hitter, it says if you're over 80% of pulling balls, grounders, and short liners, you are a shift candidate. For a right-handed hitter, you have to be over 85%. And that's because the first baseman has to hang out closer to first. You can't be as aggressive on shift against righties. You can't leave that big a hole open, but so you need to have a higher percentage shift. So some of our conclusions and some of our results that we have, there are 48 left-handed batters who get recommended for shift consideration by our software. Some of those you might say, hey, they know how to bunt, I don't know about shifting on them. But then again, when Carlos Pena bunts, he ain't hitting homers, he ain't hitting doubles. And that's our next piece of research. We're looking at not just the grounders and liners and short liners, we are now going to look at, we are looking at, as we speak, all of their plate appearances and to see if the shift is affecting their overall hitting ability, not just what they do when they put a grounder or a short liner in play. For right-handed batters, there's even more who hit over 85% or pull over 85% of their grounders. There's 56 right-handed batters who pull over 85% of their grounders and short liners. And of those, there are 16, of which Dan Ugla is one, who pull over 90%. So, and by the way, the Brewers and some others started shifting on Dan Ugla. I'm not sure it was aggressive enough. I know the Brewers were putting Ricky Weeks directly behind second, directly behind the pitcher. I might tend to shade him based on the chart we saw earlier. See if I can bring that up again. Trying to shade him closer towards shortstop rather than where that 7 is, but closer to between where the 7 and the 8 is where I would tend to want to play that second baseman and get my shortstop and third base into those red areas. Our preliminary research indicates that ML teams should shift more often. It is not a conclusive study. There's more to do. We only have 2 years of data, and for the most part, we only are looking at 8 batters who have shifted a lot. But I would, if I were running a major league team, I would start to consider shifting a lot more. So let me now turn it over to Ben. He's going to share some information about non-pull hitters with you.
All right, well, John was talking to you guys about the extreme pull hitters in baseball, the Ryan Howards, the Carlos Pena's, the David Ortiz's. What I wanted to do was look at the average hitter. Are there situations, are there factors other than his overall ground ball pull rate that should lead a defense to position themselves differently, maybe to employ a shift or maybe to shade a little bit less aggressively than a pull shift? But so specifically, we looked here in this study at pitch type, count, and the pitch location. We wanted to see how those three factors influence the hitter's pull rate on grounders and short liners. We're going to try to answer two questions here. The first is, are there situations where average hitters exhibit extreme ground ball pull tendencies? To give you a little bit of frame of reference, the average hitter pulls about 70% of his grounders and short liners. The extreme guys, as we saw, Dan Ugla is about 90% or a little bit higher. The extreme on the other end, there's no hitter in baseball who hits more grounders and short-liners to the opposite field, at least not over a sufficient sample. There are a few guys who hover around the 55-60% range. The Brett Gardners, the Ichiro Suzuki's, Derek Jeter's of the world, who try to use the whole field on their ground balls, and they're heavy ground ball hitters to begin with. What we're going to look at, we're going to see, is there a situation where an average hitter turns into a Ryan Howard or a David Ortiz or a Dan Uglem? The second question we want to try to answer is, are there situations where these Ryan Howard, David Ortiz guys shouldn't be shifted? Certain counts or pitches. And so that's what we're going to look at. First, let's look at these right-handed batters against right-handed pitchers. I wanted to just look at the largest sample here without looking at the platoon effects yet. We're going to look at just different pitch types. As you can see here, the fastballs and cut fastballs, as you might expect, don't get pulled as often as the off-speed pitches. You know, they come in a little bit faster, the hitter reacts a little bit slower maybe, or his reaction time is just a little bit later, and the ball's flight to the plate, he hits it more to the opposite side of the field. So in this case, the right-handed batter is hitting a lot more to the right side of the field with these fastballs and cutters. On the other hand, on off-speed pitches, curveballs, splitters, and changeups in particular, he's pulling over 83% of these and up to 85% of changeups on the ground. So all of a sudden, right there, looking just at changeups, we're seeing essentially a David Ortiz or a Ryan Howard shift candidate out of these right-handed batters, almost in Dan Uglem there. Next, I looked at by count, their different pull rates and different counts. I limited this just to fastballs because I didn't want to get like a pitch bias in there. As we saw on the previous slide, different pitches are pulled at different rates. So just looking at fastballs by count, right-handed batters, right-handed pitchers, you can see when they're behind in the count, they get a little bit more defensive and they have to slap the ball to the right side. Maybe they're expecting an off-speed pitch and they react a little bit later. Whereas a 3-0-3-1 count, they're sitting on that fastball waiting for it and they can get around on it a little quicker. And they pull it more. In this case, 3-0-3-1 counts, they're pulling about 85% of the time. Again, sort of like the off-speed pitches, this is in David Ortiz, Ryan Howard territory. We're looking at shift candidates. If every hitter hitting 3-0-3-1, you know, you want to shift these guys every time. On the other hand, we have the 0-2-1-2 counts, where they don't pull, they pull still more than half of the ground balls and short liners, but it's not as many as the average hitter. I wanted to look at pitch location as well. This is just fastballs for the time being. This is a 5x5 grid of the strike zone and beyond. The inner 3x3 represents the strike zone. And as you can see, as you might expect, hitters are thought to generally go with the pitch. If it's more inside, and especially if it's low, they'll pull it more often. If it's on the outside corner or even further outside, they tend to go with it more often. And what struck me about this graph is the magnitude of the difference, the range, from over 90% down and in to under 40% in some places, or at least in one place, about 40% outside the strike zone away. So, you know, this is the average right-handed batter against right-handed pitchers on fastballs. Let's look at off-speed pitches. As we saw earlier, off-speed pitches are pulled more frequently than fastballs, at least on the ground. And we see more red. They pull the ball, you know, 85% or over 90% down, and it's a broader red area down in the strike zone and inside. And off the plate, they still pull 68% of the time. So we're going to come back to these in just a minute and talk a little bit more about these, but we also wanted to look at these shift candidates. So these are the left-handed shift candidates recommended by the BASD software. These are the, as John said, these are the guys who shift, who pull the ball on the ground over 80% of the time, grounders and short liners. Here are the same charts we saw for the right-handed batters, the average right-handed batters. We see the same trends when they're behind in the count or when they see a fastball. They tend to pull less often, less frequently, but when they get an off-speed pitch, and they're ahead in the count, they pull more often. But the scale has shifted slightly. We see that even with a fastball, these shift candidates are pulling 78% of the time. And then in pitchers' counts, you could say they're still, you know, 0-2 is kind of the extreme, but 1-2, they're still pulling about 70% of the time, and then 3-0, 2-0, 3-1, they're over 80%. They're still shift candidates. Here's those same graphs by pitch location. on the inside half of the plate and then all over on off-speed pitches. But on the inside half of the plate and down for fastballs, these guys are still pulling at a very high rate. So, two conclusions here. Well, we saw that the average hitter is pulling these off-speed pitches, as we saw in the first graph. The second graph showed us they're pulling when ahead in the count. The third and fourth graphs showed us that when the pitch is down and in, they're also very likely to pull the ball. So, if you're an infielder, what can you do about this? You obviously don't want to tip off what pitch is coming, or you're negating you're hurting your pitcher, right? The hitter's going to know what's coming. He might, instead of pulling the ball on the ground, he might hit it out of the ballpark, which obviously didn't get through the infield, right? The count is not something you're going to be tipping anything off. If you started shifting your infield based on the count, you know, there are other factors in play here. The pitcher, how hard he throws, what his repertoire is, a number of other things. If you're ahead in the count as a pitcher, as a defense, you're 0-2, you might want to tone down your shift a little bit, as we saw, that they don't pull the ball as frequently in those counts. But when you're ahead 3-0, 3-1, even on an average right-handed hitter, they're going to start pulling the ball 85% of the time. As far as pitch location and pitch type, you definitely don't want to tip the pitch there, but even if you're not moving yourself and putting yourself in a different position before the windup, before the delivery, you might want to consider to start leaning that way as the pitch is coming in, just more subtly that later on so that the batter can't react. And the second conclusion was that these left-handed shift candidates, in answer to that second question we posed earlier, these left-handed shift candidates pull almost everything, no matter what you throw them or where you throw it, or what count it's in, except when they're behind in the count 0-2, 1-2, then you might want to consider toning down your shift a little bit, because they're a lot less likely to pull than in the other situations. And with that, I think, wraps up our presentation. Any questions from anybody? Do we have a microphone, or is there a microphone here?
I don't think we have a microphone.
All right.
Just talk about, yeah.
Yeah, I was curious, actually, any number of graphs where you're actually keeping the air with people like this to be able to do this. What is your sample size? Because it occurs to me that, no pitcher, especially if they know the batter, you're not going to be throwing equally to every one of those boxes. And so there should be error bars on those such that, I guess I would be curious to see that, to see if somehow you're getting moved over and certain ones, your difference between your 81 and your 88 down in the corner, for instance, and plus minus 4, then from the same value, that would be an interesting thing to put in.
Absolutely.
And particularly for when you're splitting up, is it a single season or 3 years or whatever?
This is, I have 2010-2011 built in here.
Okay, so that's 1,200 at bats. That would assume 15 pitches.
So,
which is actually pretty large.
Well, no, but this is all hitters, right? So this is every right-handed batter against every right-handed pitcher over those two. So sample sizes were huge here, hundreds and hundreds for every single one. But you bring up a good point. I didn't mention this. On the shift candidates one, we only had, I think it was, 40 left-handed shift candidates? And using those guys, the off-speed pitches, nobody throws an off-speed pitch up here, at least not intentionally.
Which is why.
Well, maybe they do. That's why those were under sample sizes of like 20, and so I grade those out. But the others, I felt, there were dozens and dozens in those still, so I felt more confident. But you're right, sample size is a little bit.
If you did that, you could just add the 20 or whatever, you could put a number up there.
The only comment I would make is the information that we're seeing here is along the lines of common sense. And we're seeing numbers that make sense. I mean, when you see the lower left-hand corner in the strike zone at 93, and the next box is 88, the next box is 84. All right, that middle one's 90, but they're all in that same area, and the point is the general point, not necessarily whether each box is perfect, but the general point is that the shift candidates are pulling fastballs, unless you can put it on that outside corner.
And well, and the color coding helps, I agree.
Yeah, that's the kind of oh, there's always rage. There's rage. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Right here.
When you listed the most shifted hitters at the beginning, they were all left-handed, except for Teixeira. Who were the most shifted right-handed hitters? And when you evaluated the hitters who should be shifted against, did you look at the percentage of lefties who are shifted against and the percentage of righties who either are or should be shifted against?
So here's the list. So Jack Cust is the number 10 most shifted hitter, but the 115.
Right-handed hitter.
And now the top shifted hitter against right-handed hitter is probably Dan Ugla. And if I had to guess a number off the top of my head, I would say that it's 12. It was 12? So it was 12. I'm not guessing. So it's just not done. It's just not done. And I think it should be tried out more than the 12 times. Probably 12, 9 of those 12 were by the Brewers. But I would say try it out, man. Yes.
Just out of curiosity, is Teixeira shifted more as a left-handed hitter or is it equal with a right-handed?
Yeah, same thing. He's got less than 12. I know that was the most. So less than 12 times was he shifted as a right-handed hitter. He pulls just as much as a right-handed hitter, it turns out. But he's only being shifted as a lefty. Yes.
What does Bill James think of?
I told you this. You weren't supposed to bring that up. Bill, based on just anecdotal watching of games, and particularly David Ortiz watching the shift, and David Ortiz, by the way, is not a shift candidate based on our software. He only pulls 70% at this point in his career. But based on what he has seen, he has some doubts about whether he should play the shift, and it's something that people should consider. Now, I'm actually glad you brought that up. Bill is wondering if, especially with runners on base, he's seen situations where the fielders are in the wrong location, and now a runner is taking an extra base because that, you know, that third baseman is way over towards second, and now the guy scrolls from second to third, or the wrong guy is. The third baseman was supposed to cover second, but now he ran back to his position, and the shortstop, you know, things can go wrong, and he's seen it. But based on our numbers, you know, based on the batting averages alone, it seems like you're gaining 50 points or so. So that's the preliminary indication. Right. Righties and lefties. We did look at that anecdotally. I've looked at, you know, righties versus lefties, and I don't. Maybe Ben knows something.
I remember looking at pull rates by. I don't know about the shift rates. How often teams have shifted, you know, the right-hand man versus the lefty. But I did look at pull rates of right-hand batters versus left-hand batters, and it made very subtle difference. You know, a couple percentage points how often they play.
Yeah, I looked at some specific batters. They looked about the same, whether they were facing a lefty or righty.
Yeah, that's kind of good. I mean, it was a surprise there.
Right. Nothing we saw. Right here.
One of the ways a shift can be defeated is if the pitcher misses his spot. I guess the question is there any way for you to factor that in, and would you anticipate it would make any difference?
Well, I think that most teams, when they put a shift on, they are trying to coach the pitcher to pitch inside, and especially if he's throwing a fastball. I think that when you have these extreme pull hitters, what our analysis is showing is You don't have to worry too much about that. It's only on that if you get the fastball on the far outside corner that you're getting down to, what was it? It was still over 70%. Still 73, 81, and 81. So, you know, that ain't so bad to have the shift on. So I would take the position that you don't need to worry too much about the pitch location against these extreme hitters. Have the pitchers pitch where you think they're most likely to get the hitters out. But the thing that this taught me was your infielders, your middle infielders especially, your shortstop and second baseman, watch the signs. Know the signs. If there is a breaking ball being called, either start shifting before the play, or if you think you're going to give away the pitch, as soon as he's releasing the ball, move, lean, get ready to go. Know the pitch that's being thrown. I've never had the opportunity to work directly with Major League Baseball players, probably never will, but that would be one thing I'd want to try to teach my middle infielders. Back there.
Two quick questions. One, have you seen it or have you looked at any changes in pitch type selection when the shift is on? And two, do you think shifting against righties would take away the bunt as an option since the first baseman has to stay around? So maybe it's even a better angle since they don't have the bunt as a little bit either.
What do you mean, Marlon?
I could do the hard ones.
I don't recall about the pitch types with the shift on and how that varied. I do remember seeing, I did look at the pitch location and saw that they do, in fact, throw more inside pitches when the shift is on than those same hitters in touch. But I don't have an answer to that. Did you get another question?
Do you think the fact that they have to keep the first baseman on if they shift against righties makes it an even better thing since they can't bunt either?
Yeah, you really have to be skilled bunter, and a right-hander would then try to bunt towards the second base position to get past the pitcher. And that's a harder bunt than trying to bunt down the third base line. So I would say that is less effective, right? So that's a good observation. I hadn't thought of that. It's a good observation. Right behind him.
Yeah, with the software, when you're showing like a guy's last 120 grounders.
Yes.
How big is that? Like, give us an idea of like how long a period are you talking about for Ryan Howard to produce 120 grounders or Alex Gordon or something? I don't know why I have a sense of that.
That's most of the season, I believe.
Is there a reason why you chose that number in particular?
Yeah, it was we felt we wanted to mix a large enough sample size with the recency effect.
Okay.
Because we believe that recency players can change. But as we found, as we've gone forward, we haven't seen that much variation. Like if you looked at his previous 120, you might get 88%. If you look at his previous 120 to that, you might get 86%. And then previous to that, 90%. David Ortiz was one example where he dipped below. And he was a shift candidate, and he slowly dropped. And I don't know if he's doing that intentionally, or his bat speed slowed down, or he's like, hey, they're shifting on me. I'm going to hit to all fields, you know. So I don't know.
And this is more of a DRS-oriented question, but if you're using DRS for any respect to player evaluation or formulating defense protection or anything, anyone that's done that probably knows, you know, it loves every grade individually. And then, you know, the teams who shift more heavily as we showed in the beginning, obviously that affects their individual defensive protection.
Right.
Could there be any attempt under the current construction of DRS to separate out what is the player's intrinsic field of value versus what it's doing? Is that going to have to come from sort of the next generation of field?
Yeah, the DRS numbers, defensive runs saved, are a reflection of the player's range and his positioning. So better positioning will improve his defensive runs saved numbers. And so we're getting, you know, good overall numbers, but splitting it between his positioning and his range, we've done individual studies. This is an individual study of what positioning does. We did it for Chase Utley in the last book that showed that he was really doing ultra positioning to playing deep in the hole, deeper in the hole than other second basemen against left-handed hitters, and closer to second base against right-handed hitters. But right now, we don't have a systematic way to break down range versus positioning. And, you know, the field of X nirvana will help us get to that breakdown if that nirvana ever hits, especially for, you know, people in the public. You know, obviously, the team will have that information. Yes?
Any thoughts about as the shift or shading or whatever is used more frequently, that batters may more frequently adjust to maybe not bunt, but to just kind of drive the ball to the opposite field, get it under the grass, and maybe even get a double on something like that?
It's interesting. And maybe you want them to do that. You know, it's a question, you know, that's what we're going to study. That's the next thing we're studying. All plate appearances. What effect does the shift have? Do you want Ryan Howard to think, I'm going to try to hit to the opposite field? And there is absolutely no question that if he does start thinking that way, he's going to lose some power. So
still only homers one about every 12 at bats. So there's 11 at bats there that.
Right. It's, you know, that's why this requires more study. We'll see what happens. But preliminarily, I think it's suggesting more shifting.
Now, Howard's interesting because I think fly balls, he's much more of an opposite field.
He is. He hits. In fact, I think
he hit more opposite field home runs than anybody in the last 3 years.
That's one of the things that BISD has shown. And it was, Tomey is the perfect example, and Howard's another example. But Tomey's even better. We have a chart like this for outfielders. And for Jim Tomey, it looks a little like Ryan Howard is pulling, you know, he got to put the shift on. But when he put up his outfield chart, and we actually eliminate home runs, because you can't field a homer, so where do you position your outfielders? Well, you're not going to try to position them to catch a homer. So you got to eliminate that from the studies. And the most common area of where he hit a ball in the air in the outfield was the closest spot to the left field wall at the corner of the left field line. It was that deepest corner had the most batted balls by Jim Tomey to the outfield over his last, but we do 135. So it is a different animal in the outfield than it is in the infield. And Jim Tomey is deep. And Ryan Howard, go ahead.
So our teams, is there a comparable defensive strategy for the outfield?
The outfield, the average hitter hits 52% the opposite way on balls hit in the outfield. So it's not as dramatic. There's not that kind of dramatic positioning that you would do. So like Jim told me, most teams, and I've only seen a couple teams, most teams put their center fielder to the right of the line between home and second base. It doesn't make any sense. The left fielder, there's a few teams I've seen put on the other side. And you shouldn't do that. You should put the center fielder in left center against Jim Tomey. And that's what the sample softish says.
Just two quick observations.
It's like when he's hitting home runs, I'm not going to defend that. What about I'm just going to move my infielders around? I don't know. Sure, why not?
We're getting the wrap up signal, but I wanted to say to Sean's question too about the outfield positioning is we have looked at, now with our batted ball timer, we have looked at the hang time of these fly balls, and I've seen that fly balls hit to the opposite field tend to be higher fly balls than the ones hit to the full side. So I think there is some more research that needs to be done there, and you know, obviously if the ball's higher, it's a lot easier to range further to make one place. But I think we got to wrap up now.
Well, I got one last question.
I'm just wondering if you've been able to integrate any speed of the batted ball in terms of where it goes, because anecdotally I would say that shift candidates who hit grounders to the left side probably don't hit as hard as the grounders to the right side, and you usually see that one fielder on that side of the field playing pretty deep, but it might maybe benefit people more to bring that in.
I think when you saw the Ugla hit, some of them were really hard hit. And you're saying the balls to the opposite side are going to be slower hit, so maybe you don't have to worry about it that as much. So yeah, that's something to consider, something to look at. We have looked at it. One thing I will note is Carlos Pena beating the shift. The Braves were playing him the third baseman at the normal third base position, and so he stopped bunting. And then with two strikes, he moved them. The Braves moved their guy back to the shortstop position, and sure enough, with two strikes, right then and there, Pena bunts it down the third baseline and gets a hit. So he was really doing some smart things with the bunt. So you got to be careful where you put that third baseman if you got a bunter, a guy with a bunt. So if I were playing against Pena, I'd probably put the shift down and keep my third baseman right at third and see what happens. But who knows? More research to be done. So thank you, everybody. I really appreciate it.